Hello and welcome to today's episode of Rainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice for the local church. I'm your host, Jonathan Howe, and as always, I'm joined by Tom Rainer, the president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources.
One of the most phenomenal trends that is taking place in churches today is the trend of multi-site. It's the trend of churches having more than one location. Sometimes it's multi-venue within a single facility, but many times it's multi-site. And we're past the point now of talking about churches, will they go multi-site or is it a trend? Now we're talking about the pervasiveness and the acceleration of the trend. So I think we're going to cover some interesting points here, Jonathan, because many times when we think of multi-site, we're thinking about big churches that have multiple campuses all over a region. But we may change the thinking on that just a little bit in this podcast.
Well, my first question on multi-site is, what about the small churches?
Well, let's define small. Once you look at a church of 200 or more in attendance, you're looking at a church that's probably in about the top one quarter of all churches in North America.
Uh-huh.
So let's move that attendance size down to 100. Average worship attendance of 100. Is that a church that could possibly go multi-site?
It depends.
Well, it always depends. One of my favorite answers is, it's contextual.
Yeah.
It depends on the situation. I get questions all the time on the blog, and they'll come as a result of the podcast as well and other means. Social media especially.
You
see all the questions I get on social media?
I do.
Would you tweet to me how I can turn my church around?
Yes.
Some things like that. I wish I could answer all of those, but I'm not able to. But one of the issues is, my church is this size. This size may be 300, it may be 400. And recently, I even knew of a church that was 200, about 220, 230, and they are thinking about going multi-site.
Mm-hmm.
The reality of it is, multi-site is becoming as common, not there yet, but multi-site is becoming as common as multi-service.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, small churches can go in that direction. Just like multi-service, you need the resources. Just like multi-service, you need to make sure that you're equipped with worship leaders, with preachers, and with all the technology that goes there. And, of course, you need a place as well. But, yeah, we are seeing a lot more churches of a smaller size going multi-site. We are seeing some church planters start off with the idea, the concept that, hey, once we get to about 150, we're going to have another location. We're not going to build anymore. We're just going to go to another location.
Yeah, Ed Stetzer in his book with Warren Bird talks a lot about that in Viral Churches. Talks about being born pregnant.
That's what he talks about.
So whenever you birth a church, you envision the fact that you are going to birth another one shortly thereafter.
And that birth can be an autonomous church, or it can be another campus of the existing church.
Yeah.
It can go either way.
Yeah, and before we get started today and cover these topics and the multi-site thing, we do want to say a thank you to Vanderblum and Search Group, who is the sponsor for Rainer on Leadership for these episodes. And you can find out more about them. We'll talk more about them at the end of the podcast. But visit westaffthechurch.com for more information about Vanderblum and Search Group.
So my main contact at Vanderblum is William Vanderblum.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You have contact with Holly?
Yes, Holly Tate.
Holly does a good job over there.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, their whole staff just seems really, really
on
top of it.
People across the country that help them find talented and qualified pastors and leaders for churches and ministries.
Yep.
And they do a great job over there.
Yep. Thanks to Vanderblum and Search Group for all they do.
And so back to multi-site churches, one of the things that we've talked a lot about on the podcast when we've talked about millennials and in blog posts this year, especially in the last 6 to 8 months, has been millennials moving away from large worship gatherings toward more intimate-sized, you know, smaller worship gatherings, even if they're at a large church.
Jonathan, it wasn't too long ago that you and I were in a particular church, and we were seeing the master plans for what they were going to build in that church. And if I recall, the average attendance was in the 500 or 600 range, like that. I don't remember the exact numbers, or about 400. And we were looking at the master plan, and the master plan had a worship center of
1,000. Yeah.
And I thought to myself, and I even mentioned it to the pastor, are you sure you want to go in that direction?
And they had the space for it. I mean, we were at the facility, and it wasn't an issue of space or that. It was just, how big do you want to build, basically?
How big do you want to build? And I would actually be more comfortable with them building a 300, even though they have 400 now, and being multiple services right away. because the trend is away from larger gatherings. The millennials, and again, I define millennials as those born between 1980 and 2000, oh, about 78 to 79 million, almost 80 million, sometimes I round it up in conversation. The millennials are moving away. The Christian millennials and the church visiting millennials who may not be Christians, they are moving away from the large worship gatherings. So what you are doing automatically when you have a large worship gathering is you are a deterrent to some millennials, not all of them. And so what the multi-site does is instead of just having this one large gathering or two large gatherings, whatever the case may be, they have more than one and more than one site.
Yeah.
I really think that's a trend of the future for the millennial generation.
Yeah, and you and I have a mutual friend who owns a church construction company and builds buildings for churches. And what he's telling us is he's rarely building anything larger than 700 to 1,000. Now everything is being retrofitted and making smaller, more intimate size worship centers.
And we had a trend, particularly during the peak of the boomer generation. Boomers are old,
yeah.
In case you didn't know that.
Yes, you are.
I am a mid-boomer, and I'm about to turn 60 years old, so we're the old generation. We're the one that's introduced, for the most part, a few exceptions, the big gathering.
Mm-hmm.
And the mega church in size of a worship facility came along with the boomer generation, and it became popular. But boy, there are going to be a lot of rather empty large facilities in the future if something is not done. So the boomers have led the way in the large worship gathering. The millennials and Gen Xers are coming back and saying it has to be smaller.
The next point and the next reason you should be thinking multi-site in your church is that governmental restrictions on buildings and land are changing.
All right, here's a quiz for you.
Okay.
What did I do vocationally before I came to Lifeway 10 years ago?
You were the dean at Southern Seminary.
Okay, that's it?
And a church consultant.
There you go. I was a church consultant. I had a company in those days called Rainer Group.
Very original name, by the way.
Yeah.
To the point.
I borrowed the group from someone else.
Kind of like Rainer on Leadership.
Yeah, and TomRainer.com. Yeah. We can get really creative here. I did a lot of consultations, almost 500 of some nature or another, during about a 15-year period. And even though I was dean, I was outsourcing a lot of the consultations, doing much of it myself. The number one type of consultation I did my last 3 years mm-hmm. was to be an expert witness.
Yep.
I became an expert witness, usually representing or hired by the church, in order to be able to build in a location where the zoning authority, usually a municipality, was saying, you can't build here anymore.
And why were they saying that you can't build here?
Well, they weren't.
For the most part.
Well, their reason was not stated, but the underlying reason there is the more space you occupy, the fewer tax dollars
we have. Because a church does not pay property taxes on land. Therefore, the more land taken up in a city by churches equals less taxable land for the city.
That is exactly right. Now, that would never be stated because
would be discrimination.
That would be a discrimination.
However,
but you know, there would be, oh, we don't want the city would say we'll have too many people in the neighborhood and we'll have crowding problem. But if it was a ball stadium, they wouldn't have cared whatsoever. But as long as
a mall up there,
they'll put a mall and have all this parking. But I would go in and I would be an expert witness to talk about what would happen if the church was not allowed to expand. That became my primary consulting my last 3 years. Hmm. I traveled as far west as California and as far northeast as Maine and even in South Florida. And now if I can just think of something in Southern California. I did one in Southern California. Now I can remember that one.
So all corners.
All corners and a lot of places in between. And I would either do a deposition or I would get on the witness stand. Many times I would do both. And I would be a witness for the plaintiff, the church, who was taking on the city or the zoning authority. Why? Because there are more and more governmental restrictions on building. And so they say, okay, we're not going to give you any more room to expand. So what's the alternative? Go find a strip mall, or go find a vacant building, or go to a school and lease it and start a second campus. That's our third or fourth, whatever the case may be. Some churches have not been able to expand on their current facility, so they are moving out beyond their current facility and locating on different areas, different plots of land, because they cannot build anymore. Lyle Schaller, the kind of dean of consultants, Lyle Schaller, many, many years ago, like in the 1980s, predicted that this trend would take place. Mm-hmm. And he said, you watch it. The dean of church consultants was saying, watch it. This is going to be an issue in the future. And it is even more so now. If you're in a small town, if you're in a rural area, this probably isn't a reality.
Yeah.
But if you're in a suburban area or a metropolitan
area, it
could very well be a reality that you are not allowed to expand. And they won't tell you the reason, but they want the tax dollars.
Number three, and this is a related topic, but a different part of it is that it's difficult to find large plots of land, especially in, like you talked about, suburban areas or urban areas especially.
All right, I'm going to give you a test.
Okay. It's the second one in this podcast.
I know, but you'll do well.
I aced the first one. So.
What? Not really. Okay. You didn't name them all.
Okay.
Well, I had to prompt you with the second one. All right. Here's what was my last full-time pastorate? Where was it located?
Green Valley Baptist Church,
Birmingham, in the Hoover suburb of Birmingham, right near the Galleria Shopping Center, shopping mall. 10 acres.
Mm-hmm.
In the midst of a tight residential area.
Yeah.
Ran completely out of space.
Mm-hmm.
10 acres is a lot of space, but we ran completely out of space. What did we do back in 1992?
We started a second campus.
Now, I didn't know that multi-campus would one day be cool, but I did it for one reason. We had no place to expand. We had no additional land. We were surrounded by residential areas on northeast, south, and west. We were fronted on the west side by Patton Chapel Road. That's on the north side. And we didn't have any opportunity to expand anywhere. So I just asked this question, well, if we can't expand here, why don't we just have another campus? And we leased some shopping center space, and we opened, it's very original in its name, Green Valley South.
Because it was south of the
other campus. It was south of where we were. The Green Valley First Campus was in Jefferson County. The Green Valley South was in Shelby County. And so that was the reason that we started going multi-campus back in 1992. It's because we had no more land to expand. That's true for many churches.
So churches sometimes run out of land, run out of space, like you talked about. They open up another space. But sometimes, if they're running out of space or growing, other churches that may be dying can come to them, and that's the next point, and that's acquisition of other churches.
Yeah, I wrote last year, which would have been 2014, a little book called Autopsy of a Deceased Church. One of the reasons I wrote it was because there's a reality of how many churches are closing in North America every week, and the numbers continue to increase. And I projected that they may be as high as 10,000 over the next several years. I don't know if that's going to be a reality, but based on some trends, I've seen that as a possibility. Well, what's happening when these churches close? There is this place that's already been zoned. There's this location that has already been built.
Mm-hmm.
There's this place that is already identified as a church.
Yeah.
And many times they close down, it's rezoned, and another facility goes in, or they raise the church facility, and it's no longer a place for the church.
Yeah.
There are a number of creative and outreach-minded, evangelistic-type churches these days are saying, don't close, let us, our church, bring you into our family. Sometimes it's called a merger, sometimes it's called an acquisition. Let us bring you into our family, and then you will be a campus of our church. We talked with not too long ago, I believe it was about five episodes ago, with Mike Glenn, who is my pastor and the pastor of Brentwood Church in Brentwood, Tennessee. They have an entire initiative called Middle Tennessee Initiative. Part of that initiative is helping churches that are on the precipice of death survive by becoming a part of the Brentwood system, and they provide resources and they bring people in.
Mm-hmm.
And we've already seen how they've brought two or three churches back to life that were just right on the edge of death. So when you acquire a church, you then automatically become multi-campus.
Yeah,
that's happening in many different locations.
So if a church is interested in doing this, you can't really go out and put a sign up that says, hey, we want to buy your church.
We buy churches.
Yeah, we buy churches.com.
I like that kind of build churches.
So I don't know if that's the best strategy for this. I mean, obviously, it's more of a word of mouth kind of thing with pastors, but that kind of gets back to knowing what's going on in your community and in the surrounding areas, not just right down the road. I mean, it would be bad if you kind of acquired a church that was 200 yards away, you know, right down the street. But, you know, across town, across the, you know, a different part of the neighborhood, those kind of things. How do you forecast that vision or cast that vision to other churches?
Here's one thing. If you acquire church one time, you'll never have to advertise again.
Because
everybody lines up.
Well, that's something I talked to Mike about. Yeah. I saw him a while back at a luncheon, and we were talking about the Middle Tennessee Initiative. And he says he gets more calls every week now that they've started this and people are finding out about it. He said all the time pastors are just like basically giving them the keys to the church. And he's having to turn people away because they don't have the resources or it's not a good fit.
You know what I'd do if I was a pastor in Nashville?
What would you do if you were a pastor in Nashville?
I would go to Mike Glenn, and I would say, I know that you cannot take on all of these churches, but I know that you have become known as a church that helps acquire mm-hmm. churches that are about to die. Let me be a part of it, and we'll look at some churches as well. So that is one of the ways that I would then let it be known that we're open as a church to acquiring other churches.
So if somebody in, say, Hendersonville, that's a pastor in Hendersonville, and they come, and a church in Hendersonville calls Mike, he said, well, we can't do it, but call... So-and-so.
Yeah, exactly. Connect with those churches that are already doing it. And the reality of it, sadly, is there's so many churches that are very sick or maybe dying that there are a number of them that are willing to do so. There's a sense of desperation in many of these churches. I actually think that the acquisition of churches, which causes the multi-campus to automatically take place, is a healthy trend because we're preserving property and facilities that may no longer be available for houses of worship in the future.
And for the most part, we're breathing new life into communities and areas that have lacked it.
Exactly. Because these churches, once they're on the path to death, once they're dying, the community knows that, and they avoid it. And now you get a vibrant presence in there, and it can not only be a reviving presence for the church, but it can for the community as well.
The next point is that multi-site can take advantage of existing facilities. Now, not just churches, but storefronts and other type of facilities.
Yeah, and we gave that example when I was talking about the time that I went multi-campus. I knew that, first of all, in 1992, my church thought I was crazy. My church leaders thought I was crazy. I called it satellite.
23 years later.
I called it a satellite church. I think Perimeter Church in Atlanta had used that terminology, and they were one of the first ones to do it. And I said, we're going to start a satellite church, and this may not mean anything to you because you're so young. Mm-hmm. But to the older people like me, it does. One of the deacons spoke up and said, like Sputnik?
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what Sputnik is?
Sputnik was the first satellite in space by the cosmonauts.
And so they said, like Sputnik, we're going to have a church orbiting the Earth? No, that's not exactly what I meant by satellite. Now I realize what I was doing was multi-campus. There was no way I could have led my church to build another facility in another county, even though it was only about 8 or 9 miles away. And so we looked for storefront property in Shelby County, and we found it. And then we found some adjacent facilities to it. And so we opened a door between the two facilities, and we opened this new church called Green Valley South. And we didn't have to build anything. We just had to start making lease payments. So
it was a low financial investment for the
low
church.
Low capital outlay.
Yeah.
Low capital outlay. You don't have to go through this great building program. You can also test it as well.
Yeah.
If you build a facility and the people do not come,
it's got a tough.
You've got the facility.
Yeah.
If you lease a place on a 1, 2, or 3 year lease, it doesn't work. It gives you the option to pull back. It also gives you the option to relocate.
Yeah.
So
maybe it's working, but it could work better in another location.
Another location, and so you move to another area. I really think this multi-site movement and this particular issue that we're talking about, not always building, maybe retrofitting places, but not always building, is a healthy trend because we may be expending less dollars than we need to, and so it'd be great stewardship.
Now, you mentioned yours was 8 miles or so away, because I think you were right there in, you said Patton Chapel Road in Hoover. I know the area. So, and I think your other one was in Pelham. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So that was 8 miles, but you probably had a pretty good bit of your congregation that were driving from Pelham, maybe even Alabaster, coming up to Hoover.
A few.
So you had people in that area already, and you were able to kind of, I wouldn't say break them off, but hey, there's a closer campus to you. What about churches? Like, how far is too far and how far is too close?
You know what my answer to that is?
It depends.
Yeah. It's contextual.
Walked into that one.
It's contextual. I know some churches that have successfully gone multi-campus in different cities.
Mm. Yeah.
And so...
Nelson Searcy, we talked to him the other day. He's got campuses in New York and Florida.
New York City, Boca Raton. I believe he has one somewhere in California.
I'm not sure.
So he's been able to move that DNA and that leadership in different areas. That takes unique leadership.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some churches will only be successful within a radius, and where maybe some of the other church members will.
Well, and Brentwood Baptist, they're focusing on that section from in Middle Tennessee, what Mike talked about.
That's so, a pretty big section.
That is a pretty big section.
It goes from the Alabama border,
yeah,
Alabama-Tennessee border, all to the Kentucky-Tennessee border, and then one-third mm-hmm. of the middle portion of Tennessee. So that's a pretty big area. But they have the leadership pipeline to do so, and therein lies the key.
Yeah.
What type of leadership do you have available to continue this? The big issue that will take place in multi-campus churches that are either acquiring churches or they're building or they're leasing new locations, do you have the leadership? It's all about the people, more so, much more so than the money.
More likely, it better chance of success with bringing in leadership from the main campus to the satellite campus rather than hiring outside into that?
It's
just to kind of continue that DNA?
The DNA is typically successful when you have someone from that church going into the church, or if you have a successful type of training, mentoring, guidance that brings people through your church before okay. they go to the other church. One yep. of the two is absolutely necessary.
And I mean, we're talking a lot about Brentwood and Mike Glenn just because we're familiar with it, but he's got a guy that goes into each one of the new starts and leads that for a while and then hands it off and then goes to the next one.
Right, right.
And the final point that we have today on why your church should be thinking multi-site is that you can reach people the main campus would never reach.
There were many reasons for the multi-service revolution.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons were we're overflowing.
Yeah,
so we need another one was the type of people mm-hmm. we were reaching. Sometimes it had to do with worship style,
yep.
sometimes it had to do with the time of worship,
mm-hmm.
but many times the multi-worship or the multi-service was a result of we think we can reach more people if we have a different time or a different style of worship. Now, take that to the next point. Can we reach more people if we're in another demographic neighborhood?
Possibly.
I know that we've been beating the drum of Middle Tennessee Initiative
yeah.
in Brentwood. It's just because we're so familiar with it. Brentwood, for our listeners, is a southern suburb of Nashville. It is a more affluent community on the south side, and it's typically middle to upper income. And Brentwood was convinced that there were not enough churches in downtown Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they really didn't have a presence in downtown Nashville. But they felt like there were so many people to reach
yep.
that they started a campus. And they had a pastor on staff that has now moved to downtown Nashville. They thought the church would have 100 to 200 in the first year. It's at about 400
cool.
already. And they've been amazed because of the gentrification that has taken place
yep.
in downtown Nashville about how many people that are they're reaching. And even young families with children, they didn't know that they'd have to hire children's ministers
huh.
so soon. But they have because
they
have so many people. What have they done? They have reached an area that the Brentwood campus would have never reached.
Mm-hmm.
And that other churches,
other
were,
churches
not,
were not reaching. Yeah.
There were not that many churches, certainly not many evangelical churches in that area. So they moved into an area that was right and ready for a church, and now they're reaching more people.
And one of the arguments there is, you know, especially for Brentwood, they catch, I guess, some heat for putting churches in Middle Tennessee. Right? Everybody thinks Nashville, it's the buckle of the Bible Belt.
Yeah.
However, but your son, Jess, is planting a church down in Spring Hill, which is even further south, another
further south
30
of
or 40 minutes
yeah.
south of here.
Yeah, of Franklin, too.
Yeah, south 20, 30 minutes south of Franklin. So there's a lot of churches there, but it's still 70-80% unchurched.
Yeah, you look at all the demographics, and we're not catching up.
No.
We're losing ground
yeah.
in terms of the unchurched. There is just simply not a good argument when someone says, we don't need another church.
Yeah.
Well, if we were at 90% of reaching everyone, I might say we really don't need another church, but it's almost the inverse.
Well, yeah, you could even go to the parable of the 99 and the lost one. I mean,
we need one for the one.
We need one for the one. I mean, so even 90% is not really to that point. But
that's a better 90% is a better argument than 20 or 30%,
it is,
though.
It is a lot better. But you know, a lot of church pastors probably would get some pushback. Well, we've already got a lot of churches here. We've already got churches, you know, especially where you've been, you know, in Birmingham, Louisville area, Nashville, maybe not so much in South Florida, but I bet there are probably a lot of churches in South Florida. There may not be reaching people. You talked about Pinellas County and how unreached it was.
It was. It is.
That's the case everywhere. And every pastor probably would get the argument of there's already churches there.
Exactly. And that many, some of the greatest resistance is not the governmental authorities. It is not the unchurched or non-Christians in the community.
It's the
other church leaders.
In the church, yeah.
And that's going to be the case whether it is a brand new organic church or whether it is as an extension of a church to become multi-campus.
Well, we'd like to thank Vanderblumen Search Group for sponsoring this week's podcast. They are the premier pastor search firm dedicated to helping churches and ministries build great teams. They've helped hundreds of churches just like yours find their church staff, and they are uniquely geared to help you discern who God is calling to lead your church. Find out more about Vanderblumen Search Group by visiting westaffthechurch.com. So if you're looking at going multi-site and maybe looking for campus pastors or things like that, I'm sure they can help you out.
Yeah, I think that is the case, Jonathan. We, as I look at Vanderblumen's homepage and dig into some of the places where they are looking for candidates, I'm seeing more and more campus pastor. That's a topic into itself because the multi-site revolution is underway.
Thanks for joining us today on Rainer on Leadership. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us online at tomrainer.com.